are recording.
We are live.
It always ends up being the first thing we say.
Today we're with Holger Schwarz from Vinikultur in Berlin.
Hi Holger, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for coming to my little wine shop.
It's not that little.
No, but it's.
So
I think once it started as a little wine shop in 84, actually.
84.
So this is one of the oldest wine shops in Berlin, I think.
Cool.
And we started with some prosciutto, some cheese, olive oil from the tank, wines from the small tank. So it was a very cozy, Frenchy place.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, opened 84 with a French guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a German guy, and I overtook the company 2006. So this is the birth of the natural wine part at Vinikultur.
Okay.
So when I overtook 2006, I tried to really follow my heart and my soul and what I wanted it to sell and to drink. So this was the birth of the natural wine. For Vinikultur.
So what made you gravitate towards that particular style or these particular producers that you work with?
Mm. So I'm actually a wine guy. I'm coming from a wine growing region. Then I started to make all these apprenticeship. I worked at wineries, and my uncle actually was a quite famous winemaker. In the Pfalz, working for Müller-Cattois.
So strange, because I...
Yeah, Schwarz is a name for very clear, very fruity, very, very nice and very lovely white wine in Germany at Weingut Müller-Cattois until 2001 he worked there.
Yeah.
So it's a part of my family, and I'm coming from a wine-growing region, the Pfalz, so I was grown up with wine. And that's why I think I was at this point when I overtook the company. I always was at a point when I saw, okay, you know a lot of wines and you know how it tastes. And the German wine was very popular at this time, 2006. But as well, it was at a very high level. But a lot of wines tasted in a way the same. So I understood I couldn't go on like this. You know, buying at this time German wines, because you have good quality, you have everything was already there, good prices, so there was not enough to explore at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first tasted a natural wine, it was Els Bassotz, Chenin Blanc, from Escoda Zanahusha, then I realized this is really, really strange, but I felt love and I felt desire to know more about that. But I couldn't say I liked it first way.
It wasn't
love at first sight.
Okay.
But I understood that it's something energetic and something I really wanted to explore more and more. And that's how it started. And at this time, not a lot of people, or nearly nobody in Berlin, was selling natural wines. So I thought, okay, let's try. Let's give it a try.
And this was still 2006?
That was 2006.
Yeah.
So I changed the shop design. I made it a little bit more clear, like I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And from this point, of course, I didn't change all the sortiments from one day to the other. But step by step, I tried to put my heart into this wine shop or in the products we are selling.
And who do you think is your sort of, who is your customer? Here, do you think, is there a particular middle ground of client here?
At the beginning, of course, I had to deal with the customers I had for my former patron. Yeah, and we had a lot of problems. We can say every second bottle, like Els Bassotz, went back. People didn't understand, they didn't like, they said it's gone, this wine, it's over, it's oxidized, whatever. But so it took long years.
Until, lots of educating.
Yeah, lots of educating. In the background, I had the feeling that it might work. It came as well from outside Germany, that few tourists from Scandinavia, for example, where this natural wine scene was further at this time.
I think it's interesting for them because they have no wine growing regions of their own. They do tend to be more curious about.
Yeah.
I think when you're from a place with wine growing regions, you tend to gravitate to what
and
you
especially
know.
Germany, because as I said, the German wines were very popular and very famous at this point. But the quality of German wine is only possible with quite lots of sulfur. Because of the sugar content, still a lot of German wines are on the sweeter side.
We were just talking about this.
Yeah, so this is the typical German wine needs quite high amounts of sulfur to preserve the fruit, the sweetness, the grape variety you want as a German wine lover, you want to taste the grape variety. And so these are the primary aromas, and they are just possible to be kept by a certain amount of sulfur. So this was that's why it was very hard to put unsulfured wine, especially in Germany.
That was in 06. I mean, it's changed a bit in Germany since, hasn't it? You're working with producers like Vasenhaus, for example, where they're using lower levels of sulfur, the wines are unfined and unfiltered. So I think there's definitely been a shift since then. But when did you start importing wine? Because you're not like some other wine shops in Berlin where they're just selling wine from distributors, you're also importing and distributing.
Yes.
Did you do that from the beginning? Or?
Yes, this shop already had direct imports.
So they were already buying before?
Yes, yes. So we never bought from wholesale. We always bought directly from the wineries. But the difference now is that we are doing sometimes concept for wines together with the winemakers, with the wineries. Like we will do for Lina from this year, 2018, where we'll have a, you know, Muscat Love was quite successfully last year. There will be a red Pinot Noir, and there will be a Riesling, which is fermented on the skins, things like that. So this is going into this direction to do the wines together with the winemakers.
Collaborating on specific cuvées just
for viniculture. Just for viniculture, and we will do the distribution in Berlin and in Germany for these wines. But this is future. Your first question was, what changed? A lot of things changed. And the customers. So now natural wine is popping, you know?
Sure. It's very
like,
trendy.
Yeah, it's trendy, like having tattoos or doing. Of course. And you realize as well in your profession as a tattooist that, and we, of course, we need these people. We need every people which are consuming natural wines.
I mean, I think that's what's interesting now is this sort of the link between natural wine and, say, the punk rock movement, or it has this sort of rock and roll edge about it, which I think makes it very appealing to younger people because they see something cool and different.
Yes.
Other than the generation before them, it becomes appealing.
And of course, they want to do things different than their parents.
Totally.
You know, so they can't go on drinking FX Pichler Smaragd and Große Gewächs Trocken.
It's not necessarily a bad thing to carry on drinking, though.
Yeah.
That's wine. But I know what you mean with what you said before. And I don't know if, or maybe I've interpreted it a certain way, but when you just said, like, we need these people, I think you were really referring to, like, the consumers that are coming to buy these wines. And I think this is quite an interesting point that I've been discussing a lot lately with different sommeliers, importers or whatever. It's like natural wine, or let's say sustainably farmed wine production, it has become very trendy, you know, and we often forget, like, this is a trend at the moment, and I think all of us hope that it will stick, because we forget that all those people working that way, they do this because this is their life. And that's the thing, that's like, it's a trend, but I hope it continues so those people continue to be supported, if that makes sense.
Yes and no. So I think as well, we are now at one point that natural wine is already comes to the on the middle road, you know. I always was traveling on side roads. And now I realize there are big roads coming, and there are a lot of cars coming from every side at the wine dealer. So I don't have to focus new, but I need sometimes to refresh. And as well, I will have to think about my portfolio as a small specialist.
Not that
we are established, but nothing. We have to be aware that nothing, you know, everything's changed.
Yeah, I think.
We won't drink nature wine all the years. In 10 years, we will talk about different things, maybe about sparkling rhubarb wine, maybe about Portrunk. or whatever, whatever's coming. So I try to be open for everything. And I'm coming, I don't say wine is just good when it's not sulfured. No, yeah. This is, I like the taste. I'm coming from a sommelier side, actually. Yeah. And I like the taste of these wines, but it does not mean that I do not like the other wines.
Sure.
So I'm not a, you know, 1-0 type of guy.
You're not too dogmatic about it.
No, I just, you know, the most interesting thing is when you go to the wineries and you learn people. I think that's, I'm more like the people, and to understand the people, and then I can understand the wine. Mm. You know, this is this direction. So on a normal wine tasting, sometimes it's hard because you don't understand enough. And actually, I'm interested in people more than in wine. At the end, because wine, you know, after a while you taste a lot of things, but I'm curious about the stories of their lifetime and what they do before and things like that. That's more interesting.
We can both relate to that, can't we? You often love to exchange stories of different people you get to tattoo and meet.
And also I think just the nature of wine being like a photograph of a moment in time.
Yeah.
It says a lot also about the person that made it, not only about where it's made and the weather and whatnot. I think also the person is super important.
Maybe it would be business-wise clever for me to say just nature wine, just Demeter, but it's I think after a while it doesn't.
No.
For me, it doesn't work anymore. It has to go together, you know.
Well, that's what I think the next thing is that right now maybe natural wine is very trendy, but at some point, you know, things will drop off at the side, and it'll be that natural wine teaches conventional wine some things, and vice versa.
Already like this, and I'm sure a lot of the younger generations in the VDP Weingüter, they have our wines in the cellar.
Yeah.
You know, natural stuff, and I realize because I'm sending in to them. And people are open and interested, and they say, okay, we have to, sometimes it's as well just business-driven, you know, we have to adapt. Because we can't ignore it anymore.
Which is frustrating sometimes. I mean, you see this particularly like in Australia and some of the regions. There's a huge like natural wine or let's say sustainable farming, minimal intervention approach to winemaking that's really kicked off in Australia the last few years. But you have also seen people who have made very conventional wine for years and years and years that now just do an orange wine, so they do an orange wine. And there is something about the feeling behind that wine when you taste it. It doesn't feel sincere. It doesn't feel genuine because it's kind of been forced to be this thing that it shouldn't be.
It's for the sake of being orange rather than...
Yeah, I think hardest is for these community, the inner circle of really orange wine or natural wine lovers because they want to, you know, to keep it. It's a secret to understand. But I think that's the interesting thing. It's just not enough not to put sulfur.
Yeah. Or
it's not enough. You have to have a bigger, more detailed idea about the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it can work without or with sulfur. It can work conventional or it can work natural or bio or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's just I want to find the purest, purest link between the wine grower and the wine,
right?
You know, and then and how yeah, how he yeah. does it, you know, it's I'm not dogmatic at all. No.
I do always question a little bit though sometimes when you see like a winery that produces like their bio wines, like their organic wines, and then their conventional wines. Like I don't understand the ethos and the thinking behind that because you'd think that if you believed in one, you would commit to one.
Like
they can under sulfur is one thing, but farming. Here are organic wines. Here are non-organic wines. Why?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the same as he's saying. Like business-wise, some people are just like, okay, well, we know bio wine sells, so we're gonna do a little bit of that, so we get some of that revenue.
Yeah.
But we don't want to scare off our conventional wine people because if they think we're doing everything bio, they're not gonna want our stuff because they have in their heads that bio equals bad. So it's like they're just trying to.
Of course, the winemakers want to be friendly to all their consumers. And that's why what do you think, why is orange wine, the term orange wine, so successful? What do you think?
Because it's different, I think, than the rosé, white, red, sparkling. It's other, exotic, interesting.
So the term orange wine you can find quite often, more and more often in German wineries. I think it's easy for the consumer because you had white, pink, red, and now you have orange. So, you know, it's just the fourth wine color, which is bullshit.
It's like finding another planet.
Yeah, but it's very easy to understand, you know, for, you know.
Where is that 10th planet?
It's gone. It was there and it's now gone.
I think it's very, very easy, you know, to say, okay, it's just another color. And actually, I think it's successful because people, it's the same as with the first Barrique wines, end of the 80s. You know, in Germany, you had the first wines, which were called Barrique. Oh,
Ooh, genau.
And for German wines, it was really, you know, normally we didn't use new fresh barriques and wood and things like that. And now I see it a little bit the same. Now the term is not Barrique, it's orange. And you can produce orange wine. You don't even have to do a bio certification. You just do the fermentation on the skins, and you put a little bit of air on it, and whatever. So it's very easy as an add-me-on product, you know. It's just you can make your more normal range, you can make your Riesling Halbtrocken, and it's just quite easy to make it, and it's quite easy for the consumer to understand.
A clearly defined category, number one, and two, I actually think when people finally push to have it, you know, everybody loves to explore something and be like, oh, I've tried my first Greek wine, oh my God, what, you know, whatever. It's the same, like, oh, I tried an orange wine. My cousin, I think we might have mentioned her on a previous podcast, don't quote me, but, like, she's a beauty therapist, and I gave her some orange wine. We were out, and she went, ooh, what's this? It's an orange wine? And she's not into wine at all. I mean, she drinks horrendous stuff.
Horrendous? What does it mean?
Or whatever from Canada. What's it?
What does mean horrendous?
That Canadian wine that you used to, the Jackson Tree.
Oh, God,
it's not Canadian,
American.
So it's large-scale wine,
but she's drinking, she's drinking Blossom Hill, she's drinking Jacob's Creek, you know, I cringe, I don't even look in the fridge anymore when I go to her house, but she's really into orange wine. Every time I come to see her, she's like, can you bring me a different bottle of orange wine? One of her favourites is Love Amore Albillo from Alfredo Maestro, which isn't scary or full-blown orange.
But my sister had the same thing when she came to visit me here in Berlin from London, was like, oh, we were reading on the plane about this natural wine thing, like, what's this orange wine?
I know.
Can we go somewhere and try some? I've never had it. People get excited because
like
they
think, speakeasy of the drinks world.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's easy to understand. And you know, you don't have to, you think, okay, it's just another, so first of all, it's another color. So it's easy to point. Okay, this is orange wine. So, and then the taste, there are some tannins. Okay. But you don't really have to know a lot of things about it.
And I think for people who are so intimidated about wine, they're like, wow, I'm really trendy. I'm part of, I'm in the know. And I think that's also what makes it exciting and why it pushes people to try it.
I think this is the term orange wine is driven from the producer side, which are, you know, they have to sell and they have to think, okay, how can we do it? And you can't, you know, just produce a natural wine from day one to day two. It's not possible. But with orange wine, it's just a, you know, new part of your assortment and it's quite easy to produce and easy to understand. And that's why I think orange wine in Germany, for example, is very, very common, the term. Very easy.
And how do you feel now, since 2006 to today, how are you feeling about, you talked a bit about roads, cars, things coming along. But, like, the average person that walks into your shop, they already know more than they did before? You feel like
much easier today. So people really, they are much opener for new tastes or different tastes. They didn't, they accept some of these, mistakes or some of these odd aromas sometimes natural wine can have. They're quite open. It's much easier today. Sometimes even they want it really, really dirty. You know, so some of that's what I,
I know some of those. I definitely know some of those. They want it the weirder, the funkier, the.
Okay, but I, you know, I don't have to put all this on the list. But that sometimes it's going to these extremes as well, you know, just to be different.
I think there are extremists in every.
Yeah, but after all, it's much, I must say, it's much easier today. And what I realize as well, that we have quite a lot of tourists coming from other countries. They're targeting to our shop. And I'm very happy and very proud and that they're coming to us. They trust us and they try new wines and they are ready to spend a little bit more money. That's good. I need these people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And what do you think is going to be next?
Good question.
Do you have any predictions? I mean, you said rhubarb wine, but...
I think that's not... so what stays is a trend of regional stuff. No, we can see every better restaurant has own farming and all this, all this work.
Yeah.
So what I will see is that we have more products from Brandenburg and from this area coming, and there will be grapes. There will be more and more grapes within the next years, because with a summer like this, you know, we already have the harvest finished in our small wine.
Oh, yeah.
So okay, it's next to the wall, so it's very warm. But yes, we will have more wine growing in Brandenburg and Berlin, maybe in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern.
Cool.
And as well, we have evolution. We have better cidre, poiré stuff.
Yeah,
they will come. I think this will come, and I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, me too. I like drinking that stuff.
Yeah, so this one, I think this is the next thing which comes, but of course I'm not sure, but I could imagine we will have a very good cider and very good fruit wines within the next decade. And there are even people coming from Berlin-Brandenburg going to Geisenheim and are learning production of fine fruit wines, and you know, that's a good idea. And it could go in this direction. It always needs people to do that, but I think they will do in a few years.
Excellent. I think we should open some wine.
Yes, I think so too.
It's time.
Your boss,
get
yes.
in there.
It's always funny when you are opening a bottle with a wax seal. Someone's watching, they're like, oh, but there's wax.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to be okay.
So we are tasting now two wines from our portfolio. The first one is Moss from the Loire Valley, Anjou Blanc, and it's a Chenin Blanc. This one, I think it's low sulfur, and Moss family is doing wine since natural wine since quite a long time, and they used to run a bistro in France, but then they decided to move on the producer side. And once you're there, they're cooking still very well. Very good food.
Okay, so 2015 Anjou Blanc from Agnes and René Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Their son was working in a natural wine bar actually in London called Terroirs for a while.
Yeah.
And everybody called him Mini Moss.
Mini Moss.
He's quite tall though.
Yeah, quite, yeah. The two, I think, Sylvestre and I don't know.
I think that was it. Yeah. Maybe it was brown hair.
Yeah.
There's someone that's handsome, yeah, because my neighbor.
They are both handsome.
My neighbor was looking at, she was going through, I don't know, something, a photo that I'd liked, and she was like, oh, I don't know what photo that was, but someone looked really handsome. We found the picture.
Both, actually.
And it was one of the Moss people, but what was really funny is the other person in the picture is the guy, Lars Ulrich from Metallica. And I was like, I love that you didn't notice the rock star in the picture. You're like, who's that cute winemaker? Do you know him? That's so funny.
And the one, I think Sylvester, he's doing some very nice photographs. You can see it on Facebook.
Really?
Yeah, very good.
I'll have to check it out.
So, yeah, and they're doing the wines now as well. And they're sometimes coming to Berlin as well.
When I taste this wine, it reminds me of the first time that I tried it, which was in August 2011, so 7 years ago, I tasted this at Chateaubriand at the restaurant. And that's when Chateaubriand was in its peak point, where they were like ninth best restaurant in the world in the San Pellegrino Top 100. I went into this restaurant and it's like a full natural wine list. D12 Purple Pills is playing outside the kitchen. The chefs are turning the lights on and off the whole way through service. You're just thinking someone's going to lose a finger.
Oh, God.
And everybody seems like they're drunk in there. And it was one of the wines that was served there. And I always have a very fond memory of this particular wine.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like it.
What does it taste like? What do you think?
For me, it's got a little bit of that apple cider kind of thing going on.
I get like baked
little
apple.
Yeah,
That's the another interesting thing that we have to learn the vocabulary of wines with the natural wines new.
Right.
Because it's very, we are used to, you know, to filter out the fruits,
sure.
You know, raspberry, peach, whatever. And now we are, there's a confrontation with aromas and with nuances which we can't really, you know, put on the list.
Right.
We can't find it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes this thing interesting as well, to find a new way.
New vocabulary.
Yeah, I think you have to, yeah. Otherwise, you're everything is tasting like cider.
Yeah, totally, sure.
Yeah.
But it's definitely apple.
Yeah, there is, yeah, you're right, there is apple, yeah. Is apple. And but what's for sure as well, that these wines are more on the palate than on the nose.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so it's always, that's what I think, what I like as well. So they're, you know, they're coming later.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's big. It fills your mouth up.
Yeah.
But I find this wine, even though you say like with these particular wines, with your different vocabulary, I still find this like representative of where it's coming from. Because when I think about Loire Valley and I think about the Chenin appellation, so let's just say like Vouvray, Savigny, and Anjou, I always think of Anjou being a bit broader, more textured, this bruised apple thing, this slight nuttiness in the background, that the palate I always think of as being more opulent, maybe like Savigny, a lot more like linear, a little bit more precise. But given this blind, I don't think you would say, whoa, what the hell is this? Like, if you're used to drinking Chenin Blanc,
yeah.
I think
yeah,
it leads me to where it comes from, in my mind, in my experience.
I think, yeah, I think it's a good way to start with a nature wine, with a wine like this. This is on the frontier between normal wine and nature wine. You know? So it's not too dirty, not too cloudy, not too funky.
No, it's clean. I think it's a clean wine. There's nice fruit there. It's quite fruity, actually, in style. The texture's nice. Like, I find that Chenin Blanc is a great wine for a lot of people. At the Mickelberger, we do a South African Chenin, and it's almost the favourite amongst the staff and the guests, because you've got this texture, this fruit, but this sort of savoury, like this, I've got this like chamomile quincy, like back note that gives it a savouriness, the slight nuttiness. It's not oaky, but it's also not too light and fresh, that it kind of actually ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think, yeah,
my,
you're
acidity,
right.
Acidity,
yeah.
Makes you still want to eat with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in the same way, it's soft, it's round,
yeah,
mellow. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
How long have you been working with the Moss wines for?
Since several years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but since quite a few years, yeah. We are quite happy with it, and I think it's a good point to start.
They're magic, you know, of Zhuzhuan we bring to a lot of places for dinner,
yes,
for people that don't drink natural wine and they go crazy for it.
Yeah, they're not producing it every year. Yeah, this is a very good entry.
Those magnums,
yeah,
they go like water.
Yeah.
You bring those to a party and it's gone in like,
yeah, everybody
minutes.
Likes
Everyone
it. Everyone
yeah. loves it.
Mm. Yeah.
And people are surprised because it doesn't look like something that they'd like.
Mm.
And then they're like, oh, actually, I'll have another glass.
Yeah.
Mm, I think it's nice. And they do a very good sparkling wine. Maybe we taste in another episode.
Yeah.
And they're doing well.
Also, I think pretty good value for money.
Yeah. So this one, I think the magic of Zhuzhou would be around 14, 15. This one is around 17, something like this. 17, 18.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good value
for
yes.
£20.
Yeah.
And the magnum of the Magic of Zhuzhou is what, like 35 or something?
Could be, yeah.
I think it was something around that. That's a great value.
Yeah, yeah. And the red wine as well. Is, they do a Cabernet Franc this year,
okay.
Pure Cabernet Franc. And sometimes,
oh, I've not tasted that.
No, maybe we tasted. Really well made.
I can't stop thinking every time now someone says Cabernet Franc at the top. There was one day I was like, Cabernet Franc? And I was like, you even speak French. What are you doing?
It was so odd. She's got the most amazing, I mean, she's fluent in French, and she sounds, when she speaks French, I think I'm listening to a French person. It was just this one time she said Cabernet Franc. I was like, hang on a second.
It just got lazy. Sometimes
computer says no to that information, Gwen.
I think sometimes it's that like language switch that's like, sometimes it's just easier to say it with an English accent if I'm speaking English.
Yeah.
It's the same as if I come across an English word in French, sometimes I say it with a French accent because it's too lazy to switch. But now I can't hear it without thinking of Frank, my friend Frank Cabernet.
No, I'm not always picking on her.
So we taste the next wine.
Yes.
Not too far from Barcelona, at Clos Lentiscos. They do a very good sparkling wine, which are long maturation on the yeast. And they do as well the wines in amphora, the Perry Blanc, Perry Noir. And Perry Blanc is Charello.
Okay.
And it's actually a nature reserve. And they do honey there. And it's really, really nice.
Don't they, with one of their sparkling wines, add honey as the dosage?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
I think with the reserve Blanc de Noir, they add honey instead of
sugar.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyone else doing that?
Maybe.
We're going to have to Google
is
that.
Is anybody
later.
Else doing that?
Anyone else doing that? Honey is the dosage.
I think so, but I don't know. I'm not.
I feel like that would be like an old thing.
I think it's a good idea. You can.
Yeah.
Once you're producing it, yeah.
So, Clos Lentiscos. is in Peñedas, right? That would
be the DO. Yes. Yeah. And it just takes half an hour from the airport. So if you want to visit, it's really
easy.
Really good, a good idea. It's a very nice finca. You're overlooking until the sea.
Everyone loves the sea.
So and this particular wine is?
This is made in Amphora, and the grape variety is Xarello. And
Peril
Blanc. It's 2016.
That's another buzzword right now, though, the Amphora.
I thought that said
2016. No, Amphora. That's the other, really, because that's something I hear from even clients of mine that are not necessarily super into wine, where they're like, oh, have you heard of this thing?
Yeah.
It's like another one of those
You're right.
terms that buzzword. People buzzword, because of course people are going crazy for wines from certain regions that are...
It's true, and I think also that's because a lot of these natural wine fairs, you see more and more wines being made in Amphora, like more Georgian wines being distributed, and obviously they're in Quevri, a lot of producers buying Quevri from Georgia. I think it's just like anything, like people get curious and there's more people experimenting, isn't there?
I think it's because of that Georgian thing.
But Spain has a long history as well of using Amphora. They're called Tinajas in Spain.
Okay.
And that's never sort of gone away. There are some regions that have been doing that for thousands of years too.
I mean, I feel like so much of this stuff has been done for thousands of years. It's just like people finally are like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
They're just finally starting to ask questions maybe a little bit.
It's like the coal eyeliner.
Yeah.
So more and more producers are using amphoras, that's right, as well to preserve the freshness of fruit. And sometimes they don't even like the wood which they use for decades.
Okay.
You know, they don't have a connection to it.
Right, so they'd rather not have
that. Yeah, so they are.
Fair enough.
Yeah, starting with natural wine just means as well to starting again to ask questions beyond the normal winemaking. I think that's a point.
Yeah, why do we do this way? Yes, what about if we try it this way? What is this going to do? It's like most winemakers are creative people, aren't they? So they want to explore and discover and learn. And
once you start changing everything, then you can change as well things you didn't even thought about.
Right.
So
things start becoming more obvious.
Yes. I think that's a point.
Is there a bit of skin contact on this wine as well?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it tastes like, because there's a little bit of grip. There's a little bit of
bitterness.
Yeah.
And
phenolic,
But it's, this is more, you have more tannins than in the moss.
I like it.
And this one can, I think I would use now a carafe before I would put it in a carafe.
Yeah, definitely.
But still, I think it's very nice. And it's quite different from year to year, but the 16 I like very much.
But this maybe is also my little, because I'm in my little bubble, because I work with Spanish restaurants. But I think Chirello is going to be the next, more and more people. There's been a little bit more and more hype about it over the last few years, mainly because of wine in Catalonia has taken off so much.
Mm.
But I think Chirello is going to be the next trendy grape variety.
I think
Spain.
I agree with you. Even when we were there in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago, it was really...
Chirello.
Yeah, also when we were at Bar Brutal, I really wanted to have Spanish stuff, and they were really pushing lots of really nice natural Chirello too.
And I think because, you know, like Gordeo became massive in Spain, and it was almost like it ticks almost that Pinot Grigio box. And I think Chirello does, because it's so lean, it's not fruity.
Yeah.
It's like, I always think of Chirello like a razor blade. Yeah. There's no, it's like an anorexic woman. There's no meat on those bones. There's nothing there. Just this like pepperiness at the end, this mineral, you know, summertime, refreshing pub. Even in a pub, people are going to stop drinking Pickpool and they're going to start drinking Chirello. It's just a matter
of time. I think there was always Chirello, but it didn't appear on the label.
Yeah.
The point is that now, you know, you can put it on the label.
And also, like, the movement with Cava has also changed, because of Cava from Peñedas has gone up in quality ridiculously, you know, and there's all these different people and they're all promoting Chirello as the quality grape variety for Cava as well.
Yeah.
But I think it will. The natural wine will go on a good way.
Sure, I think it has to intermingle at some point. And
yeah, but as a small, smaller wine seller, you have to see what makes your wine still different. It's not enough just to say, okay, we do orange wine, so you have to have a different personal idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Otherwise, people don't trust you.
Yeah, or they don't care. So
and they realize very quickly if you're just, you know, doing because everybody is asking for it, or if you really have an own idea of what you want to do.
I mean, I think that's true for every business.
Mm.
People can tell inauthenticity
in
people quickly. We're animals. We're trained to suss that out.
But in a way, it went quicker than I thought about the natal thing. I thought it would even take longer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Then, you know, once it started, then, you know, it's like a fermenting must.
Yeah.
It's going quite quickly.
Good analogies.
Yeah, no, it's, then once, you know, at a different point, then when it's really, really, you know, then it's, I thought it would take longer.
Well, let's hope those ferments keep boiling away quickly.
Yeah. So what do you think of this one?
I like the purity of it. I like that it's still clean. I think this might be a bit more challenging to some people because it has less of the fruit than the wine before.
It's got a little caramelly thing going on.
Yeah, but I do like that sort of sweet, savoury thing that's going on. It's all about the occasion, what you're drinking it with as well.
Sure. What would you drink this with?
Some grilled sardines.
Mm.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, really delicious.
I'm in Isawira on the port, getting the grilled sardines. The sun's coming down and someone brings out a cold bottle of this. Spin carafe, just chilling down. Oh, great.
Yeah, or maybe with feta poisson, with fish as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sardines is a good idea.
Yeah.
Or something with apples, you know,
mm-hmm.
or some, how do you say, inner rind?
I don't know.
Like the liver.
Offal.
Offal, yeah.
Yeah, things like that would work. Because there are some...
It's interesting, so the little bitterness as well and the acidity to cut
the liver or something, yeah.
Yeah, liver, kidney, something like this, which I don't like personally.
No, me neither. I was like, yeah. All right.
I always try, but I always try because I want to be
me
open.
Too.
But actually,
it's really difficult to pair, though. I think.
Yeah, so I don't. I can accept it as a starter, but not as a main course.
Yeah, I'd be so disappointed.
And you know,
I don't accept this. Take this main course back.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't like it as a main course. Kidney, for example.
No, I'd be really.
Or stomach. It's not
just
my,
eat too much.
It's not my cup of tea.
Yeah. Just eat too much.
Oh, you said that for us because we're English.
It's not my cup of tea either.
Yeah. Stomach is not my cup of tea.
No. God, no. In Naples, there's a sandwich you get the side of the road that's...
Oh, they do that all
that
over.
Tripe sandwich.
Yeah, they do that in Tuscany as well.
Not into it.
But I think tripe is not the worst. Intestines are the worst. I don't care what they say that it's been cleaned. You still know what that is.
Let's have some andouillette. You know this?
The smell.
Yeah, no, thank you.
No.
That's just, no, thanks.
I reckon with some crazy natty wine, actually.
But still, it's really...
The Vaison, I think.
Yeah.
Wipe it out.
Yeah.
That's what you need with it, just a whole bottle of
Vaison. I'm
going
to sterilise this with Van Jones.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't like drinking Vaison with food, because it kills everything.
Oh, I love it.
I think normally the natural wine dealers, they like it, the andouillette stuff, and so me not. I'm just can't.
No, thanks.
I tried, but I really don't have a full portion.
No.
No.
Trietarian.
Well, those wines are lovely. Thank you for sharing them with us, and thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Let's try one red wine from Germany.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Wasenhaus, they do it's a very small winery near Staufen in Breisgau.
Okay.
And this is actually the first real vintage. They had some Baden's Nouveau, which is more like CO2 fermentation, but this one is the first wines is vintage 2016, the first real wines.
So
they do some Chardonnay, some Spätburgunder, gut.
Spätburgunder as well,
yeah. So this is a basic Spätburgunder, but I'm quite impressed.
And for those of you that have listened since the beginning, we did cover one of their wines.
Which was the Baden Nouveau that he just read.
This is a Spätburgunder. And they used to work in Burgundy. And they have, when I visited them, they're quite cool guys. But I realized as well, they're very, very precise. They know really everything what they do. And they, in a way, it's quite German as well. But they, you know, it's a new generation. It's quite young and different from what we think a Baden winemaker should look like and should behave.
I've been following them on Instagram, actually.
Yeah, cool.
For me, it's like this producer is hands down the most exciting producer in Germany at the moment, I think. Because maybe I'm just like over-enthusiastic because it's a new discovery, but every single bottle I've had, when we just smelled it before I looked at Gwen and I just mouthed the word fuck. Because it smells
exactly like what I want to be doing.
Yeah, it's immediately cherries, it's bright. Everything that you love about Pinot Noir, like, it immediately, like, enthralls you and you're just being dragged into the glass. Even you don't want to drink, you smell this wine and you're already drinking it.
It's also so nice and light, I could probably polish off that whole bottle by myself.
That's what I mean. It's like you go out and you see someone and it's start when talking, I, so I'm not going to
when
talk
they,
to them.
When they sent me the first price list, I said, gosh, that's really, really will be hard to sell. But it's not. And when I taste the wines, I really realize it's really, yeah, it's really fine, elegant, everything. It's not. It's 12.5. Mm. There's low amount of sulfur in all the wines they decided. But they really knows exactly from the beginning what to do and how they like the wines. Yeah. And it's 100% Waisenhaus.
Correct me if I'm wrong, their vineyard holdings are 2.5 hectares, 3 hectares or something. It's very, very small, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Everything is done by hand, and they talk a lot about the wines. They talk when I visited them, they really were curious what I think about it. But still, they know exactly what direction to lead. But still, they are interested about how it's rewarded by the consumer and by the.
And in terms of like just one thing, just to touch on this wine. With this particular producer, because I think people who have experience of Spätburgunder and German red wines, I think the first thing that comes to their mind is, oh my God, high acidity, but oh my God, so much oak. Mm. I know, and I hate talking about oak, but I actually think when it comes to German red wines, it's important to maybe discuss it, that particularly with this wine, it's really beautiful because it's not dominated by oak, that all of the fruit, the florals, the aromatics, everything's singing.
Yeah.
And there's not this like strong oaky flavor at all. I haven't tried the single vineyards, but do you find that in the cruise or?
It's really amazing how they succeeded to point out the difference between the different slopes and the different wines. That's really amazing. And it still stays in one line. It's like a designer, you know, for clothes.
Yep.
You can see, okay, this is exactly this style. And they really, from the beginning, this is really amazing. All the wines are on the lighter side, on the more elegant side. They are never harsh. There's a big harmony between and after every wine. They pointed out a very good, precise image of every single wine. So you can say, okay, this is a Spätburgunder, this is a Vulcan, this is a Belen.
Yeah.
And even they... if you have the Vulcan Spätburgunder, you really have this hotness. It's fiery. It's very, you know, it's big and light and all this at the same time. This is really outstanding.
Thank you so much for sharing 3 lovely bottles of wine.
Yeah, delicious.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Holger.
Welcome. Thank you.